get, honestly. I am a designer. Like, I went to school for design, but I've never been a business person. I was so scared to go freelance, and I said, okay, well, let's just try it. I'm going to fake it. I'm going to try to build contracts. And I had, luckily, my clients are really nice, and they were like, hey, maybe you should send this before sending this. I'm like, thank you. I'm still learning.
Yeah.
Just be honest and open with people. I think the more transparent and open about your situation in life and in freelance, the more people are going to be like, oh, okay, that's fine. I can work with this.
You're listening to the Live, Work, Play Japan podcast, where we talk to the most inspiring teachers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs in Japan so you can learn the secrets of their success. For this podcast, I sat down with Jennifer Piatkowski to talk about her recent move into freelance design after working as a graphic designer for years. She has some fantastic advice for taking the leap out of a stifling job that isn't paying you what you're worth, nor giving you time to pursue other things, and into something that allows you to live life on your own terms.
So, I was living in China and doing brand experience in China. After I got done with college, I was working in Austin, Texas. And one of the guys I was interning with at the time, I couldn't get a job. So I was interning in Austin, and I was driving an hour. And I had always wanted to do, like, international branding. And it was something that was always interested, like, it interests me a lot. Growing up, my family had moved all over the place, being military. And one of the guys that I was working with, he had worked in China. So I asked him, oh, how's your experience? Where did you work? Did you like it? Did you hate it? He said it was okay. And that was intriguing enough for me to be like, do you think they're hiring? And sure enough, they were. Got an internship for 6 months and then went out there for 2 years. I was there for 2 years. So I started as an intern and left as a senior designer and brand experience, brand identity stuff. Went back to America because I was really interested in service design and UX, UI work, and felt that I needed to go back home for a little bit. China was pretty rough, but I really, really missed Asia. Like, the moment I got on the plane and got back, and about 2 weeks later, it was like, oh, I'm ready to leave again. So I've been working up, like, building up to come back to specifically Japan, because my mother had lived here. My father had lived here, both in the military, and I'd always been interested. And
were you hunting for jobs while you're in the States? You, like, found something from there, like a company that would bring you over?
Yeah. I was trying anything and everything possible. So I honestly, I was looking at companies that had more international, you know, global experience, global expertise, more global friendly environments, and I was applying almost twice a week.
Wow.
To places. There was one period in August where it was like back to back to back, just applications.
Well, it seems like a lot of foreign companies, a lot of companies here will hire foreigners to do things like design or engineering, because maybe the pool of like maybe really talented UI UX designers specifically, as well as engineers, like coders, is a little bit smaller in Japan than it is in, especially like in the United States, where they have a lot of programs to try and get people to do that kind of work.
Right. I think, too, it's the idea of the expertise of a Western company that they really, really want to look forward to as well, because they, for whatever reason, even though they have the experience, and I've seen this a lot in companies, they still think they're not as good as Western companies.
That might just be a confidence thing, because I think that was one of the studies that I looked at before I moved to Japan, was that Japanese people rate among the highest in math skills, but their confidence is way lower. So they actually perceived Americans to be better at maths than Japanese people, which, you know, even just at a cursory glance, you'd think, no way, come on. Like, Japanese kids are really great in math. I teach at a high school and they're fantastic at it compared to what I was when I was their age. Geez.
Yeah, if you ask me, like, anything about algebra or trig or anything like that, I'm not going to be able to remember
any of that. So it's a lot to do with confidence, I think.
Yeah, and then there's an idea too that, like, if you, like, you have to become an expert. So a lot of people who, and I did some interviews at my last job while I was doing employee experience there, a lot of them said they wanted to learn from an expert. And part of me was thinking, are you not becoming an expert by doing it? Like, I'm not 100% sure what you mean by becoming, like, learning from an expert, but they just mean someone older who's been in the field longer. And I thought that was super interesting because, you know, people might consider me an expert in, like, certain brand areas and brand identity. I've only been doing design for, you know, 6 years now.
Yeah.
But
Japan has that whole, like, senpai kohai structure where it's...
Exactly.
It's like, oh, I want to learn from my senpai.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to, like, I want to get better at this skill.
Yeah, you know? By just doing. They want to learn from somebody who's already done it. And
that's how you get better. Like, I felt the same thing when I was an artist at school. Like, when I was in secondary school, I was always had my sketchbook on me all the time. And there was a point where I think, you know, the internet was... still relatively new then. It was harder to find things. It's not like how it is now where you can just go on YouTube and find stuff. Yeah. This was like early days of YouTube. There wasn't all that much content on there. But I would look around for like art tutorials, how to do like 3D modeling on, you know, ZBrush and Cinema 4D and 3D Studio Max. And I'd be trying to figure this stuff out and I would just be continually doing it. And there was a point where it kind of slid into me watching more of the content as kind of like edutainment, you know, as opposed to actually doing the work. And I realized like I'm not actually that good at this art. I know a lot about it and I can go like, oh yeah, you just have to do this. But I'd never actually really done it that much because I'd just been watching the videos how to do it.
Yeah, no, I like when I was in high school and stuff, I went to an art high school. Mm. Like I thought whenever I graduated, I would become like a fine artist. And then my dad told me, oh no, you need to go to a regular university and get like a real job.
Mm.
So I said, screw you, Dad. I'm going into graphic design. I'm going to do art and also get a real job. So I stuck it to him.
Nice. Well done. Well played.
Yeah. So, but when I was in high school, I did a lot of fine art. So it was all about, and I didn't also have like a computer. So I did, but I wasn't allowed to use it that often. So a lot of the inspiration just came from, like, real-world stuff and, like, looking at art history and stuff like that. So I like to do that, too, whenever I look at inspiration and stuff.
So you had kind of, like, real-world... not real-world, but, like, a fine arts background. And that's... Would you say that's really helped you to become a graphic designer in Japan? Like, that's been a better skill than just maybe learning how to use a computer?
I think what made me a better graphic designer here in Japan is just building relationships. Like, I think... You know, if you go to school for fine arts and you understand the principles of design and
then
the
you'll
elements
be good enough.
And the elements of art, like you can design anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Japan specifically, it's about building a network and relationships because it's super important for this community. I know everyone is on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and everyone's talking through there, but Japanese, like, it's even the foreigners here, they want to communicate in person. Mm. They want to have a dialogue with you and build a relationship with you. And that honestly is what's helped me the most out here, is the back and forth conversation.
Okay, so, because then it kind of sounds like you have to have the skills, like that's a given.
Yes.
You know, that all the, let's say just for the sake of argument, all the graphic designers are at the same level. But what differentiates you more than anything is your ability to actually make connections with people, make friends, build relationships with people there, and then that will help you get new jobs.
Yeah, I think so, because even there are people that, you know, I didn't know necessarily, like I'd known them through LinkedIn or whatever and I connected. For example, the way I got my job here in Japan was there was a guy, he owns, his name's Ricardo. He built the Tokyo graphic designer community on LinkedIn, and he has it on Facebook now, and there's a big following. And the company he was working for at the time was Good Patch, and I liked everything that he was doing, and I would read his articles, started learning Japanese a little bit. And I was like, well, let's just go ahead and give it a shot.
Hmm.
And I had mentioned that I was following Ricardo and I really liked his work and I would like to work at the company. So in my cover letter, it was basically like, I think what you guys are doing is really cool. It's really cool to have like a Japanese global inspired company.
Mm.
And sure enough, they got back to me. They were super interested, and I luckily got a job.
Yeah, and that's a way better way to reach out to people, because a lot of people will do is wait until the job is on a jobs board or wait until they're looking for somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'll apply and just like, I think I'm best for the job because blah, 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 blah. But instead, what you did was you reached out to them and said, you know, I really like the work that you're doing and I think it's really great. Yeah. And that really not only makes them feel good about like the work that they're doing, but it makes them think, okay, well, actually this person is more aligned with our vision, with what we want to do, because they looked at our content, they looked at what we're doing and thought, awesome. So
yeah,
that sounds like a really good way to and I think I've talked about this a little bit on the website too, but so how going from working in a graphic design role in Japan, and you told me that you've recently been freelancing.
Yes.
So how have you made that transition, and what's actually worked for you to get enough clients to actually keep, you know, making money and surviving here?
So I just went freelance in March. I started part-time, so I was part-time at my company, and then I went part-time freelance as well, and I just used my network. I went to a lot of different UX events, design events. I talked to, you know, illustrator communities, and there's a website called canvas.co.
Okay.
And they support a lot of artists. It's basically LinkedIn, but for artists in Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they have events, and it's really cool. And so I reached out to a bunch of people there. And, you know, I did some interviews and stuff while I was still working at the company to try to, you know, branch out into something a little bit more graphic design heavy. Because I realized, you know, as much as I like user experience and UI work, I really wanted to focus more on, like, in-house branding work.
Okay.
And do a little bit more illustration, logo design, advertising, marketing kind of deal. Not so much advertising, but just in-house branding. And so I was just applying everywhere again. This is a common theme for me, so I apply to a lot of places.
Does that take a lot of doing that? Because what a lot of people will do is they'll be just looking for a job, and they... maybe they'll apply to a couple jobs a week or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you're applying like every day, finding companies or finding, especially like you said before, finding companies that you really like the work that they're doing and reaching out to them specifically as opposed to just like applying for jobs. So what else has actually worked to get you like paying clients? Like, because obviously you need to support yourself in Tokyo. It's expensive. So how do you actually... find clients that will pay you and get those relationships sort of cemented so you can start making money.
So the funny thing is, a lot of my work has come from word of mouth. So I will just network and see who needs work, or I'll say, hey, I'm available for freelance work. And I'll get clients not only here in Japan, but I will also get them in the US as well, or wherever they come from. I'm not... I've had one in London, I've had a couple in the US, and of course a couple here. What really kind of makes it easy for me is I'm now working on a retainer with a company called Rival Schools. And Rival Schools is really cool, and I'm working with them on some client work and internal work. And so that takes up about half of my hours.
Okay.
And that's where, like, I have the stability of being freelance and still taking other work on the side.
That's really good advice, because a lot of people, they're constantly looking for the next gig, and that can be really stressful. Like, it can really push you out of wanting to do the work. But if you have even just like one client who you're on retainer with, and you have a certain amount of work and you can rely on that income a little bit more, then it makes it a little bit more stable, and you don't have to worry so much. You don't have to stress out so much.
Yeah. And the only reason I made that switch was I was already working part-time at my company, and that was also giving me a stable income. And especially here in Japan with the legal aspects of it, you need to have at least one retainer client. Mm-hmm. I think it's super important, and it's beneficial if you don't want to be jumping from gig to gig to gig.
Yeah.
So, and that was the only reason why I left my current company, is because I was having a good relationship with this new company and doing more of the work that I wanted.
Mm.
But I think, you know, here, it's important to have at least one consistent client. And if you can get a year contract and they can work with you on like part-time hours, so that way you can focus on your, you know, the work that you want to do, or even the work that is paying a little bit better, you know, depending, because those gigs, right, they come and go, they don't always stay around. So that would be my suggestion for anybody who wants to do freelance here. But then there's the visa aspect of it.
Okay, so tell me about that.
I have a visa through my old company. So they hired me, I got hired in March of 2018.
Yeah.
And I got a 5-year visa.
Yeah, so they sponsored you. But that's one of the things, and I wrote about this on the website, is that the company doesn't own your visa.
No.
The Japanese government owns the visa. So, you know, the company can't take it away from you. That's something I wrote about in a article about working rights. Because a lot of people are afraid, like, if I want to leave the company, am I going to lose my visa? And it's like, no, the company doesn't own your visa. But then when it comes to freelancing, it can be quite difficult to square that away with immigration.
Yeah.
There's like a trade-off there.
We'll have to see. I actually have to call them next week to make sure that I'm still okay. And if I'm not, I will probably continue to see if I can find a company to do part-time and then still do work. Because as long as you're still within, you know, you're not changing what you're doing.
Right. And that was the issue that I found as an English teacher, was that when I started doing web design work, even though the visa category in 2015, it added engineer to the category. So it was like humanities, international services, and engineering. And so I thought, okay, so that's great. I can do engineering work now. And I just kind of started doing it, and I didn't check beforehand. And that's something I wrote about my experience with that and how to do that properly. Because I learned from a lawyer afterwards that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. And so I had a little bit of trouble with immigration, but I managed to fix it because I hadn't done it on purpose, and I talked to people at immigration to figure that out.
Yeah,
so that was difficult, but there's a good way of doing that, which is to fill the special permission to engage in activities form, which is kind of a pain because you have to go to immigration a couple times to do extra forms. Yeah. But at the same time, like, once you get that squared away, then you can have that, you know, confidence that actually you can do the work that you're doing.
Yeah, and that's what my brother did as well, because my brother is also working out here. And
that's cool.
He did the same thing kind of like that you're doing, which is he started as English teaching and then transitioned out to freelance and his own work. And he found that he also had to fill out this special permission form.
Yeah.
And it is a pain, but it's worth it in the long run, because at least you know that you're covered by the government.
Mm.
And I would say too, like, if you don't know... Like, how much trouble did you get into for not knowing?
Well, the main thing is that the trouble wasn't, it wasn't, you know, something that would be a risk for me staying in Japan. What it was, they said, like, please stop doing freelance work. And then I found out afterwards, like, how the rules of that worked by talking to people at immigration again. And understanding more like the specifics of what I wanted to do, because when I went to them first time, that was actually one of the things that was really important, was that I had already gone to immigration and I'd said, hey, can I do engineering work? And they said, well, your visa says engineer, so okay. And so I thought, okay, that means that's okay. But freelancing isn't the way I was doing freelancing wasn't okay. The best way to do freelancing is to, like you said, have a retainer with a company. Like, I think if you don't have a company that will help sponsor your visa when it comes up for renewal, then you won't be able to stay in Japan. And that's the main thing that's a real difficulty. But luckily I had a client who, you know, I'd been working with for 2 years, who essentially sponsored my visa for renewal as a client, which allowed me to continue freelancing. But a lot of people think that there's this this myth going around that actually nobody knows, but they just keep on saying it, and nobody actually has any way of proving it or disproving it. But they keep on saying that you need, if you have an income of more than 250,000 yen a month, you can self-sponsor. That's absolutely not true. And I've asked lawyers about this, and I've looked on the Japanese government websites, and I've scoured them for information on this. It's just not true. There's no such thing as a self-sponsored visa.
Because a lot of people think that is true.
A lot of people think that's true, and then they try it, and then they get in trouble. like, in a similar fashion to how I got in trouble, but depending on how much work you put in beforehand to check and to to find out if that's possible. You could get in deeper trouble than I got into if you don't understand the rules of that. If you don't try and find out from immigration whether that's okay.
Yeah.
And I'm, just because I'm maybe cautious by nature in that sense, that I checked with them. And so that's why it was okay, and that's why I didn't lose my visa. But I'm sure, if people just, oh yeah, as long as I'm making $250,000, it's fine. I can just change jobs without telling immigration or whatever. You can get in trouble for that.
Yeah, I was about to say, you still have to tell immigration. Going to immigration is not fun, but necessary evil, right?
Right. So what's hard about doing the kind of work that you're doing in Japan? Have you found that being a graphic designer in Tokyo is more difficult, or do you find that actually it might be easier because of the different level of competition here?
I think it's... I would say that it's... I don't know, there's pros and cons, right? Mm-hmm. If you know Japanese, my Japanese level is pretty low, so that kind of limits me on the type of work that I can get, because I have to... I'm very big on communication, I found out, over the last couple years. And one of the things that I like to do is talk a lot and explain things. And if you can't do that in Japanese, then it kind of puts you at a disadvantage. So that for me is a downside. So I have to work with more international clients. The upside is, compared to my hometown in Texas, which is San Antonio, I get a lot more leads, a lot more work. And at the value that I perceive where I'm supposed to be. So I don't know what it was, but back home, you would say, hey, I have this project, here's my proposal for you, and they'd be like, that's way too high. Even though the cost of living for me, I think, is about the same as what I was back home. It's a little bit more, but honestly not enough to be oh, this is really, really expensive.
Yeah.
Because I live about, my lifestyle is about the same.
Right, so companies in the States maybe wouldn't want to pay you enough to even make a livable income.
The company I worked for before, I was making really great money, but I wasn't doing the work that I wanted to do, so which is why I moved here.
That's a big trade-off, right? Is that sometimes doing the work that you want to do, it might just not be paid as well, or it might be harder to find jobs, because if it's something that's very interesting naturally, then a lot of people will want to do that kind of work, which drives the price down.
Right. But what was happening is San Antonio is really close to Austin, and so what people were doing, they weren't perceiving the value in the city, but they would go to Austin instead, and they would pay more for people from Austin. And then I would show them my perceived value and what I thought, and because I was from San Antonio, nobody. That was, they were all like, oh, that's way too expensive for what we want. And
in San Antonio.
Yes. And then coming here and giving people the same price, sometimes more, because, it's a bigger city. And then the client size also depends. If the company is bigger, then my prices change. It's value-based pricing, right? So I would charge about the same, and people are like, yeah, that's great, let's do that. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is super, super interesting. So I have a lot more variety of projects, and people are happy to pay me, which I'm like, yes.
Nice.
it's a weird twist. And I know that there are certain people who probably struggle with that a lot here, where they're not getting gigs, and they're not, they're trying to target with leads and stuff like that, but I've found, with me, I haven't had too many yet, but the clients that I do have, they're just really casual and really chill, and I got super lucky is the word, but that's because I set myself up way in advance.
Yeah, set yourself up to be lucky. You're not going to get a lucky good client if you're not finding any clients, if you're not putting in the groundwork to actually get the people that you want.
Right. About 3 months, 3 to 4 months before I decided to even go freelance, I was putting out oh, I'm going freelance. I'm doing this. Does anybody need work? I'm going to start at this time.
Yeah. Don't just jump into it hoping that you'll get clients on the day that you quit your job.
Right. Right. Some people go into it what's the word that I'm trying to think of? They'll just jump right in. And I'm throw in a kid and a pool and be like, okay, go swim. And I decided, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I have to go very slow. And so I set things up like for success, like 4 months out, I was talking to different clients and different people and just telling everyone, I think I'm going to go freelance. No, I think I'm going to go do it.
Mm.
And people heard that. And just by saying it and putting it out,
yeah,
people will think of you.
And that's something that I think I've done as well. And a lot of people don't realize how useful it is to be just saying, this is what I do. Yeah. And a lot of people maybe don't have the confidence to do that. I think a lot of that comes down to confidence.
Yeah.
Is that when people are just starting something new, like being freelance on something. Like when I was a web designer, I didn't really have the confidence to say, I'm a web designer. And when I'd say that in front of my friends who were coders and stuff, they'd be like, ah, you do WordPress designs. You're not a web designer.
That's so rude.
Yeah, but I understand it from the perspective of like engineers who are like coders, and they really understand the space. And I'm just like making websites for people on WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
And my clients really loved my work. And I'm basically the same as you. I got a lot of referrals from word of mouth.
Yeah.
But what I found was that a lot of people were really, as soon as I said that I'm a web designer, they'd be like, oh, cool. And then they just kind of like connect me with people without me having to do any real work. Like, I think just just meeting people in Tokyo, having relationships where it actually just makes it easier to find work, get jobs, get gigs, just because
super
you know people.
Mm. It's super important, especially here. Like, I have never seen such a in-person community.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, back home you can try to connect people via email, do cold calls and stuff like that, and cold emails, and that normally works, but here it doesn't work as well. And I'm super shocked that I even got the job that to move here, because that was all through just Skype and cold emails and stuff that people normally don't get jobs that way. They have to be here. I got super, super lucky because of my experience and what I was doing at the time. But I don't know, for anybody who really wants to be not only a freelancer, but anything in design, it's kind of, you have to be here, you have to talk to people. I just got extremely lucky. And like I said, I applied a lot because people are like, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. And in my brain goes, ah, that's fine, probably wasn't good enough for me, or maybe next one.
Right, it's a lot to do with attitude as well.
Yeah.
Because attitude is one of the big pivotal skills that I talk about this a lot, and I talk about it a lot in my coaching program, is that people who have an attitude of like, oh no, that's not going to work, like that doesn't, I can't do this, or that, oh no, people don't do that, that's not how it's done, kind of thing. Those people generally don't get very far, and it's not because they're not skilled. Like the skills, like we said before, the skills are kind of a given, but if you don't have the confidence to push yourself to go further, to reach out to more people, to connect with more people, then you're going to struggle.
Yeah, and I just have a mindset that, like, you know, I may not be good at one thing, but I am really good at this thing, so please focus on that more so. And then the other stuff that you think, they're okay at, I can learn and develop over time, and I've proven that time and time again, that it is about what you know, but it's also about knowing who you are and selling that to people too. I like to use my personality a lot when it comes to this type of stuff, because I feel like too, when they're hiring you, they're not hiring you just because of the skill set. They're hiring you because they want to build a relationship with you. So I always keep that in mind. So I always like to bring up the fact that, like, I'm a big wrestling nerd. People can relate to, you know, when you bring yourself down a little bit and they're like, oh, this is just a real person. I think this person would be cool to have a relationship and work with.
And that's probably quite useful in Japan too, where it's not so much just about the task that you do.
Yeah.
It's also about who you are. Like we said about the relationship building, that it's about who you are as much as it is about you being able to perform the task that they want.
Yeah, because people don't want to work with somebody who's just super, at least what I've noticed, and maybe this was just the clientele that I get.
Yeah.
They don't want to work with somebody super stiff, and then it's just like, yes, no. They want to hear my opinions, and they want to talk to me, and
super
they also
useful skill.
Yeah, they want to like know that. I mean, I have clients now where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to a wrestling event. They're like, okay, have fun.
Yeah,
see you later, and it's just having a good time. They want to know that I'm not just a designer, that I also have
a
life.
It makes you more fun to work with as well, and that builds morale, makes the place a little bit more fun. What I'm curious then, what other advice would you give for people who are maybe just in a similar situation to you, they're just starting out as a freelancer, or they plan to start out freelancing, what other skills do they need other than, of course, the core competency in what it is that they do, like graphic design or web design or, you know, coding, whatever it is? What other skills do they need to succeed in that in Japan?
I would say patience. If you do know Japanese or you do have like Japanese speaking skills, that's also really good. I'm trying to think of other skills. Like, are we talking like design skills or like soft skills?
Yeah, more like what are the attitudes, the mindset, the soft skills that they really need to actually
You have get ahead. To, of course, be confident. You have to be able to sell yourself and your work. So if like it's hard to sell yourself. It's hard to sell people on the idea of you and why they should work with you. And I would say that would be one of the biggest things of like, why should I work with you is a big thing that it's a big skill that anybody should have in freelance. Communication is a big one. I communicate. One of my favorite things was that I picked up from another freelancer. He said, I follow up with clients anytime they email me. I follow up with them at least 24 hours like later.
Yeah.
So what I've seen is that communication gaps are always...
And that can be really hard to work with as well. Like, I've noticed the same thing. I've hired quite a lot of freelancers for, not only for Live, Work, Play Japan, and not only for my clients, but also for, even just on, like, Fiverr or something, to do some graphic design, like, simple, you know, just a quick icon or something for, you know, $5, $10. And the biggest problem and the biggest differentiator between any of those designers and any of the people that you hire for that kind of thing is... You know, do you send them something and then they get back to you 2 days later and say, like, you know, I'm busy or something, you know, like the it makes you feel like, okay, actually, I really don't like working with this person. And you just don't hire them again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always pay the designers no matter what. Like, even if a lot of people try and say, like, oh, you know, we didn't use the work or, you know, it's not good enough or something like that. Especially when it's their fault and they haven't given you a very good brief. But but I always pay the designers, but if they're not very good and if they don't communicate well, like you said, communication is so important, it makes me feel like I don't want to work with them again.
Yeah, I would say, like, even if you feel like your work isn't up to par with other designers, if you are able to communicate and have a relationship and give people follow-up and updates and stuff, that's more important than the design. Because they can go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
But if you have the communication and the soft skills to make that, you know, little lasting impression, it's so much stronger, especially here. I'm trying to think of any other skills. I would say communication and selling yourself are probably the two. And just being flexible.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I find there are certain things that just move very slow with freelancing. So you kind of need to be flexible on the fact that, like, deadlines sometimes don't always
happen. I know what you mean. Because Japan, because of the decision-making style here is by consensus as opposed to by hierarchy. So it wouldn't just be like a boss says, yeah, that's it, we're doing that. Mm-hmm. And then everyone has to fall in line. In Japan, they all have to, like, talk to each other and they have to have, you know, meetings, and then they have to, all of them have to agree on this point before they go to the next point. So a lot of decisions can sometimes take a while to go through the chain. And so that can mean, as a freelancer, you might say, like, okay, well, I'm ready to do this work now. And they're like, okay, we'll get back to you soon. And soon for them might mean a month later, they're like, okay, we're ready to do the work. And you're like, that was a month ago. Like, what the hell?
What have you guys been doing for a whole month?
Yeah.
But it's that idea of, like, the group, it's the hive mind, right? Like, right. Everybody needs to say yes before moving forward. And it was one of the biggest struggles I had in my Japanese company was who's the decision maker?
It's like everyone's the decision
maker. Everyone is. We don't want to make, and I get it, nobody wants to make a decision and then it be the wrong decision and then
get in trouble.
Yeah, and that person is obviously to blame if they make the wrong decision. But it does slow down the process a lot when you don't have one decision maker. So just flexible, like, because flexible on timelines, but also flexible on, like, payments and stuff too, because there's always going to be somebody who doesn't pay you on time. I, knock on wood, I've been paid on time so far.
Yeah.
that's not always guaranteed. So, and there, I have some clients that I have really casual convert, like, relationships with, and I know, like, one of them is a good friend of mine, so she kind of pays me when she can.
Right, but if you know that they're good for the money, then that's one thing. But it can be a real problem, especially if you have bills to pay. Having clients who don't pay on time, like this also comes down to having a good contract.
Yes.
And having good, as a freelancer, like this is, if there's one thing you take away from this conversation to the people listening, having a good contract as a freelancer is absolutely essential, because yes. you can get seriously screwed over if you don't have a contract, especially like defining how much time you're going to put into a project, how much money you're going to get paid, and when and how. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had clients who have for 3 months said like, oh yeah, I'll pay you the other half like at this time, and then they miss the deadline. I'm like, okay, so where's the other half? Like, oh, we had some problems with our bank, you know, we couldn't do the transfer. Yeah. We'll try and do it next week, or, you know, we're out of the office for Golden Week or something. It's like, we had a contract, you know, and you can put things in the contract to say, if you don't pay on time, then there's a certain percentage fee mm-hmm. every day or every week or however long, like whatever period you define. You just have to, like, the contract is a negotiation. You've got to figure out like, what can you say and what can you agree to make sure that they actually pay you on time.
Yeah. And some designers too, they also will not give you deliverables until you pay.
Yeah.
So that's one option. I think it depends on who your client is mm. and how the payment system, like if they take a long time to do like your deposit or make the first payment. Here in Japan, a lot of companies, they're like, we don't do deposits. So, which is interesting. And I kind of
risky, especially if you're doing some work that might require you to pay for something up front or buy some new resources, something.
It's super interesting. All the clients I've had here, like we said that we could, but we couldn't. So, I do payment plans. Mm-hmm. So we'll do we'll split it up into two. So halfway through the project, they pay like 50%. And at the end, they pay 50%.
Okay.
So if you notice that there's like some struggle, if you do have a deposit and they're struggling to pay even that deposit, you could always say like in your contract, like deliverables will be sent once final payment is sent.
Hmm.
And that's one way to do it. Like I said, I've really lucky. I have not had anybody not pay me yet. So
there's a really great YouTube video. I forgot the guy's name, but I'll post it in the links in the show notes. This guy, I think the YouTube title is something like F you, pay me. And it's basically all about having good contracts, having a lawyer who will help you and support you when you need somebody to pay you, because actually not being paid by clients because you haven't arranged properly is a huge problem. It happens all the time. It happened once with me with a client where he didn't pay me for 3 months, and eventually I managed to get half payment from him, and that was all I had to write it off and go like, okay, I did the work, I didn't have a very good contract. And that's when I got really serious about having contracts. So that's really important. What would be like any final advice for people freelancing that would help them to get clients and help them to make money?
Well, I'm still learning as I go along too. Like, I'm still very new. So I don't know. A lot of it is just go for it. Like, even if you're not sure what's going to happen, if you go slow, I like the slow and low. It's like barbecue. If you go slow and low, the outcome's going to be always really good at the end. So go slow. Use your resources. Like all your network. Use your mom. I use my mom. I was like, hey mom, do you know any, you know anybody who's looking for work? She's like, no. I'm like, okay, well, you ask.
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it, honestly.
Mm.
I am a designer. Like, I went to school for design, but I've never been a business person. I was so scared to go freelance, and I said, okay, well, let's just try it. I'm gonna fake it. I'm going to try to build contracts. And luckily my clients are really nice, and they were like, hey, maybe you should send this before sending this. I'm like, thank you. I'm still learning.
Yeah.
Just be honest and open with people. I think the more transparent and open about your situation in life and in freelance, the more people are going to be like, oh, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I can work with this.
And I think a lot of clients, like, they'll see that if you're a genuine, authentic person, they won't want to screw you over. There'll be some people who will take advantage of that, but they're probably the minority. Like, in my experience, they're by far the minority, especially in Japan, where people being upfront and honest about money and stuff, like, that's quite a point of pride for people here.
Well, so. And also, like, you can probably just feel it, like, take your gut reaction. If you feel like this person isn't going to be like a good person to work
with, get out.
Get out while you can. Just even if you think you need the money, you don't need a bad experience like that.
Absolutely.
Normally your gut's right on that.
A massive thank you to Jennifer for coming on the show. Remember, if you have any questions about freelancing, teaching, or entrepreneurship in Japan, you can ask them at liveworkplayjapan.com/podcast and go and click the appropriate button to record a message for our podcast. See you next time.